From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letton. Cell phone calls from Russian soldiers fighting in Ukraine.
Hello. Hello.
The calls reveal soldiers' anger, fear, and frustration over the war, and expose possible war crimes. They were intercepted by Ukrainian authorities and obtained by Associated Press investigative reporter Erica Kinets. We heard some of them on Reveal last year. Since then, Erica got more, including calls showing soldiers' desperation as the war grinds on.
What's interesting about these intercepts is the number of people who spoke openly about wanting out of the war. One of the men said he felt forgotten. Their lives are worth nothing to Moscow, and they don't know what they're dying for anymore.
For some Russian soldiers, there's a way out of the war. An underground network run by fellow Russians to help soldiers escape both the battlefield and also harsh treatment from the Russian military. But even far away from the war zone, it can be hard to find a safe haven. For this episode, we're partnering once again with the Associated Press. With support from the Pulitzer Center, we go inside a secretive operation to undermine President Vladimir Putin's war machine and save lives. And a note before we start. This week's show contains descriptions of graphic violence and may not be appropriate for all listeners. Here's Erica Kinets.
This past January, Ivan Chuvilayev got an encrypted message. Ivan lives in exile in Spain. He's a Russian anti-war activist, and this message was from a man who said he was a soldier in the Russian army. He'd spent nearly 6 months on the front lines in Ukraine and was fed up. Ivan messaged back. Let's talk.
Алло, алло.
Да, алло, слушаю вас.
Да, здрасте, это Иван из Идите лесом. Добрый вечер.
Добрый.
I asked him to be calm and not to be afraid of me. I told him, well, all right, tell me the whole story, how it happened, how it started, how it finished.
The man told Ivan he was born in a former Soviet republic in Central Asia, and that before the war, he was living in Russia as a migrant worker.
He's older than any soldier in the army could be. He's more than 50 years old.
He said that after Putin ordered the full-scale attack on Ukraine in 2022, he started seeing signs plastered everywhere around St. Petersburg, on buses and billboards.
The major thing in these billboards is that they are promising fast and big money to anybody who will sign the contract with Russian Ministry of Defense.
At this point, the man knew little about the war other than the propaganda in the Russian media. And he was struggling to support his son, who was studying at a prestigious university. So he thought this could be an easy way to make a lot more money than he could as a manual laborer.
Most of people, I would say, who signed the contract for the last year, primarily they signed it because they needed money.
Once he got to Ukraine, he realized he'd been misled. It was not a way to make easy money. It was a slaughterhouse.
The most common word they use when they are talking about their experience is they were f***ed up because they were told one thing and they faced simply another thing.
The man on the phone with Ivan was on leave in Russia from frontline duty, and he wanted out. He did not want to go back to Ukraine.
Of course, everyone asks, why did you go there? Why did you sign the contract? But unfortunately, Russian officials are quite talented in tricking and in lying.
Ivan's job is to help Russian soldiers and other men facing military service escape, ideally to get to other countries. The name of his group is Get Lost, and its co-founder is Grigory Sverdlin.
There is a lot of desperation. People do not see how this can end. People decide to desert, facing 15 years in jail, by the way.
Grigory was a prominent homeless advocate in St. Petersburg who became a harsh critic of Vladimir Putin's war in Ukraine. Facing possible arrest, he fled Russia to the Republic of Georgia, where he launched Get Lost in September 2022. Its literal name in Russian is «Идите лесом», or «go through the forest». But as Grigori explains, that phrase has different meanings, depending on your audience.
First meaning is «get lost», «go f*** yourself». That's message to Russian authorities, obviously. And the second meaning is «hide in the forest». And that's the message we are sending to all of the people who do not want to go to Russian army or want to desert from Russian army.
Get Lost operates a channel on the popular messaging app Telegram. That's how most people contact them, including that soldier who was trying to pay for his son's college. In his calls with the man, Ivan encouraged him to leave Russia as quickly as possible and return to his home country. But in the chaos of war, things can go sideways quickly, and soldiers can just disappear.
And he told me, well, I will think about it, I will make my decision and go back to you, and he didn't.
This was the last time Ivan heard from the man. Get Lost says it supported more than 22,000 Russians who want to avoid going to war. And more, the group is being asked to help active duty soldiers who want to get out. I wanted to get a fuller picture of how this underground railroad works. How do groups like Get Lost help Russian soldiers defect from the front lines of the war? And what does life look like for them once they're out? So I traveled to Kazakhstan. That's where I met an officer we'll call Yevgeny.
Yevgeny was one of the very first clients who were professional military. He was an officer, and he was one of the first guys who helped to leave the front line. As I remember, he entered military academy when he was a young boy, a teenager.
Yevgeny is a decorated war hero who has been celebrated on Russian state TV. He agreed to speak on condition of anonymity, fearing deportation and persecution of himself and his family back in Russia. By the time we meet up, it's been about 8 months since he deserted. I arrive at his apartment in the capital, Astana, together with a translator and video journalist. It's around 10 a.m., and he's just getting up.
It's nice to meet you.
Здравствуйте, мне тоже.
Thank you for taking the time.
The place stinks of cat, and there are four guys sharing the apartment with only three chairs among them to sit on, three spoons to eat with. Everything feels temporary. Yevgeny sits in his bedroom next to a pile of coats on the floor that was serving as another guy's bed and tells us about his time in Ukraine. He led an intelligence and reconnaissance platoon of around 15 men that was part of the invasion force. The deeper they got into Ukraine, the uglier things got. He says he didn't want to kill anyone. But he also wanted to live. In Ukraine, Yevgeny saw things he can't forget, things he knows are wrong. He says Ukrainian prisoners of war were executed early on because the Russian military couldn't get them back to Russia and didn't want to build detention centers.
Special people were chosen for this because a lot of others refused. People with a special, so to speak, psyche were appointed executioners.
By April 2022, Ukrainians were mounting a fierce resistance, and the Russian army was pulling back from the outskirts of Kyiv. In their hasty retreat, Yevgeny's unit ran into an ambush. He says around 70 people from his brigade died that day. Yevgeny showed us a video the Ukrainian military released of the encounter. There's no audio, and the footage looks like a video game. Graphics of Russian and Ukrainian flags bob above the tank so you can follow the battle. Then it cuts to a magnified image of a Russian tank pluming smoke, two dead guys curled on the ground beside it. In the comments, someone's written, "Very cool. The best sight in my life is to see how the Russians die," writes another.
What's it like for you watching that video? I mean, you were in that column, and you know people who were dying in that fight. What's it like watching that?
Ну, вообще, я только один раз смотрел. Я не хотел на это больше смотреть.
Well, actually, I only watched it once, and I did not want to watch it again. I don't want to look at my friends who were killed. For what? It's painful. Many of my friends have died, and these were really good guys who did not want to fight. But there was no way out for them.
We spend more than 5 hours talking with Yevgeny. At one point, he rummages through a box filled with the few important things he brought with him when he fled. He can't find his medals of honor, but he does find the certificates for military commendations. And then he suddenly shoves everything back in the box. He seems ashamed. Yevgeny doesn't like to talk about seeing his friends die. And he doesn't like to talk about the people he and his men killed either. When I press him, he tells the story of an encounter along the road to Kyiv, when his unit got stuck in a field outside a village. They stopped to repair their vehicles, and he says two men approached, who appeared to be armed. He ordered his sergeant to fire.
People often ask me, did you kill him? But who really knows? He shot, one man lay down. But did the man just fall over, or did he wound him or kill him? It's unclear.
In May 2022, Yevgeny and three other soldiers were ordered to retrieve their unit's last drone, which was stuck in a tree in Ukrainian territory. But this, for them, was basically a suicide mission. They'd already lost one soldier here.
We were sent to get it from the same place where my soldier died. For a month, we could not take his body out. He was just lying there.
There was just no way to get that drone. And it was the last straw for Yevgeny. He'd already seen a lot of things he didn't agree with, lots of incompetence, lives wasted, and he didn't want to kill people. Yevgeny and the three soldiers came up with what they called Plan B. The sniper would do the shooting. Yevgeny would take the first bullet to his leg, then the comms guy in the thigh, and finally, the sniper himself would take a bullet to his arm. The fourth guy didn't want to get shot, but he said he'd stand by their story. So they go off into the forest, ostensibly to get that drone, but instead of that, they get their tourniquets ready. Just don't miss, Yevgeny tells the sniper. Shoot into the soft part.
First, they shot me. Then they shot the comms guy in the leg. And then the sniper looked at us and thought, screw it, this is scary. He changed his mind after watching what happened to us. It's very painful. Imagine taking a metal bar and having a strong man, like a power lifter, hammer it into your leg with all his strength. This is what it feels like.
His friends dragged him through the woods, and he was evacuated that night. He shows me the scar on his leg. He likes to joke that he gave birth to himself. He says, no life begins without suffering. And as with childbirth, he went through intense pain to get a new life. Yevgeny was shipped back to Russia. He knew he'd eventually be ordered back to Ukraine, so he went into hiding and contacted the anti-war activists at Get Lost. Here's Ivan Chuvilayev again.
Yevgeny is extremely brave person, and he hates war. He doesn't want it.
With Yevgeny hiding in Russia, Ivan and Grigory's team set to work, trying to get him out.
The only thing we can do here is providing information, clear, verified information.
We create a route for them, all of the details discussed, which documents you will need and what border you should cross.
We agreed not to disclose Yevgeny's escape route, but it's one that's been used by other deserters. Yevgeny made it to Kazakhstan in early 2023. Back in Russia, authorities filed a criminal case. His relatives were questioned, and his apartment searched. Yevgeny took a lot of risks to make his dramatic escape, but life in exile isn't what he was hoping for. This is common for a lot of deserters who remain in a perilous kind of limbo, living in hiding, Yevgeny doesn't have a regular job. He's afraid of document checks, doesn't have a SIM card, a bank account, or a lease in his own name. Yevgeny and the other men I spoke with have watched deserters get deported from Kazakhstan back to Russia or seized by Russian forces in Armenia. Just this past February, a high-profile Russian defector, a former helicopter pilot, turned up dead in Spain, his body riddled with bullets.
There is no mechanism for Russians who do not want to fight, deserters, to get to a safe place.
Yevgeny says helping Russian soldiers desert is one way for the international community to undermine Putin's war in Ukraine.
After all, it's much cheaper economically to allow a person into your country, a healthy young man who can work, than to supply Ukraine with weapons.
He's applied for asylum in Western Europe and doesn't know what he'll do when his savings run out. He would like to go to the United States or maybe use his military training to serve in a UN mission somewhere. But it's hard for him to draw a path to that place from his grungy apartment. Grigory says defectors like Yevgeny deserve a lot more support.
These people made this very hard decision facing, I will repeat, 15 years in jail. So it's a very big risk, and these people have proven that they don't want to be a part of this war.
Many Russians who oppose Putin's war have struggled to find new lives in other countries, including the United States and Europe. We went to Istanbul, Turkey last year to visit a network of safe houses. Activists were sheltering men evading the military and others, educators, business professionals, artists, all escaping Putin's Russia.
So we're in one of the co-living spaces. Since the beginning of the war, it is the second apartment we rented here in Istanbul.
Ava Rappaport is with the group Kovchak, or ARC, which regularly partners with Get Lost. She told us this apartment housed up to 12 people, who typically stay a few weeks until they find other accommodations. Many were hoping to build an exile community in Istanbul that would stand up in vocal opposition to Putin and the war.
I think it's like almost an obligation that being outside of Russia, we can exercise our freedom of speech, saying what we think about the events. We should be saying it openly and loudly for all the people in Russia who cannot do that.
But a year later, Ava says most of the people who fled to Turkey have had to move on to other countries because they were denied residency permits. She says very few could get visas for countries in the European Union or the United States.
There was hope that Istanbul could be some kind of hub for Russian oppositionary culture, being this strategically located place, but now this is all going away. That's something that was not expected, but it became our reality.
Despite lackluster support from the West and more violence and repression in Russia, Grigory and Ivan say they're not backing down.
The more successful Get Lost is getting, we get more and more dangers. But dignity is more important than safety. And love to my country is definitely more powerful than fear.
This past February, Get Lost organized a special day to honor soldiers who make a bold stand. They posted videos like this one from a Russian army deserter. With his face blurred out, he's pleading to his comrades still fighting in Ukraine. He says, don't be afraid to desert the Russian military, because that's the path to a happy life. Ivan says Get Lost is trying to redefine what it means to be a deserter.
It is quite a simple appeal. Leave the front line. Be a deserter. Don't wait for anything, because all this huge machine is working only on killing people. Just go.
From exile, Ivan thinks a lot about how Western countries could be rallying around military defectors, how working with Russians who oppose Putin is in the strategic self-interest of the West. Like during the Cold War, when many people escaping from the Soviet Union were welcomed with open arms.
Lots of defectors, even KGB spies, didn't want to serve for criminals and killers and came to European states or to United States and gave up to local authorities. They were heroes. We should remember that.
Erica Keynes is a reporter with the Associated Press's Global Investigations Team. Our story was produced by Masho Lomashvili and reveals Michael Montgomery. Both Russia and Ukraine have been less than forthright about how many soldiers have been killed in the war, and that's brewing discontent among Ukrainians.
One may ask, my son died for Ukraine, but Ukraine does not want to recognize his death.
That's coming up next. You're listening to Reveal. From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. This week, we're collaborating with the Associated Press for another look at the conflict in Ukraine. Some experts say it's becoming a war of attrition, but what does that mean in terms of human lives? We just heard about one officer's decision to desert the Russian army and flee the country. That story came from AP investigative reporter Erica Keynes, and she's with me now. So I wanted to ask you, what is the scale in terms of desertions in the Russian army?
A number of signs indicate that a growing number of Russian soldiers want to get out of the war. Get Lost, the group that helped Yevgeny escape, has been getting record numbers of requests from people seeking to desert, more than 500 in the first 2 months of 2024. These days, around 30% of all requests for help are coming from active duty soldiers. A year ago, it was just 3%. Still, I think we should put this in the context of Russia's overall troop strength. Russia has around 470,000 troops on the ground in Ukraine, according to one leading think tank in London. And so morale may be falling, but Russia's still got a lot of troops on the ground.
So it sounds like there aren't many deserters that are actually making it to the West, and that's where a lot of them want to go. I would think that if you create incentives for soldiers to desert, like offering them support, it could be one way to deplete the Russian military. So why aren't Western countries stepping up?
It's true. A lot of people do want to leave and very few people are getting in. So we got some data on this and found that fewer than 300 Russians got refugee status in the U.S. in fiscal 2022. We can't say how many were soldiers, but we can say that in 2022, the number of asylum requests the U.S. Department of Homeland Security got from Russians nearly quadrupled to almost 9,000. France and Germany have also seen surges. Asylum requests from Russians were up more than 50% last year in France and more than doubled in Germany. But the deserters we spoke with, like many people in Russia, particularly in the armed forces, have passports that only allow them to travel within a handful of former Soviet states. So it's hard for them to even get to places like France and Germany and America to claim asylum. I think also for a lot of people, Russian soldiers who desert just don't draw a lot of sympathy. And Western countries haven't really made up their minds as to whether they're potential national security assets or threats. Are these guys spies? Are they war criminals? Or are they heroes?
So you and your team made an effort to document the scale of the carnage of this war. What have you found?
I think it'll probably take years before we can really get an accurate picture of how many people have died in this war. For now, we can say that Western intelligence estimates put the number of casualties on both sides at more than 500,000. That kind of human toll has not been seen in Europe since World War II. And the dead are transforming the landscape. You can see the scale of loss from satellite images. And from the sky, the graves look the same on both sides of the front. Fields that were once empty are now just quilted with these patchworks of fresh tombstones. President Zelensky recently said that at least 31,000 Ukrainian soldiers have been killed in this war. That's less than half of what Washington has estimated, but it's much more forthright than Putin has been about Russian losses. Moscow's silence hasn't stopped work being done by Mediazona, the independent Russian media outlet, and BBC's Russian service. They've confirmed the deaths of nearly 50,000 Russian soldiers who've been killed since the full-scale invasion. And they say that number probably captures just over half of the true death toll.
The scale is just, I don't know, it's hard to wrap your head around that number of people dying.
It is. That's why we wanted to see what these cemeteries looked like from space, and that is still only a fraction of the total numbers out there.
I want to bring someone else into the conversation. Solomia Hera is a Ukrainian reporter who's worked alongside Erica and helped count those graves in Ukraine. Hey, Solomia.
Hi.
So tell me, I know that you've seen a lot of graves. What struck you the most?
So when I visited cemeteries, what struck me really is amount of rows of graves filled with Ukrainian flags, flowers, and personal belongings of young soldiers. And many of these soldiers were born after 2000.
Yeah, so you're looking at all these grave sites for really young people whose lives really hasn't even gotten started.
Yeah, exactly. And this is what is shocking. Mm.
It sounds like talking publicly about the death toll in Ukraine is something of a taboo. How do ordinary people feel about that?
Indeed, it was a decision of Ukrainian government until lately not to disclose number of casualties. For Ukrainian families, it's very important to talk about their dead family members who died for the sake of Ukraine. But for regular Ukrainians, when what they read in news, what they see in cemeteries does not match with numbers provided by government, then the question arises, what for did soldiers die? And one may ask, my son died for Ukraine, but Ukraine does not want to recognize his death. And therefore, some Ukrainian families feel it's disrespectful towards the dead soldiers not to say the actual count.
Erica, when people describe the conflict in Ukraine as a war of attrition, what does that really mean?
Yeah, attrition is kind of a nice word for something that's actually really very ugly. A war of attrition means that who prevails is increasingly shaped by who can tolerate higher losses. And by that measure, Moscow has a clear advantage. So I took a quick look at the demographics, and Russia had 3.7 times more men of fighting age than Ukraine did in 2022. That's according to data from the World Bank. And the analysts I've spoken with say that it will be very hard for Ukraine to outmatch Russia's forces, which have continued to grow in overall size despite hundreds of thousands of casualties, without significant help from Ukraine's international partners. Top needs that they flag are artillery ammunition and air defense capability. The failure of the U.S. Congress to approve $60 billion in aid for Ukraine is not helping. Lack of long-range artillery means that Ukrainian commanders have to push more people into the range of Russian fire to physically hold the front.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this sounds horrible, but Vladimir Putin can just throw more bodies at the problem, and it doesn't seem that he really cares about that.
Yeah, it seems like Putin knows that he can sustain higher losses than Ukraine can.
And that ties into, I guess, Ukraine's belief that they should not tell what the number of dead are, because if they say the actual number, it's really clear that, for lack of a better term, it's a dwindling resource, right?
Well, I think, you know, this has to be put into context. Saying how many people have died can be a real hit to morale. So neither Ukraine nor Russia really wants the true number of war dead to be known. That's the same for pretty much every war. I don't think there's transparency in wartime. And if you think of past wars, sometimes it takes decades for people to get the accurate data.
Erica Keenetz is an investigative reporter for the Associated Press, and Solomia Hera is a reporter who's been working with the AP in Ukraine. Thank you both for coming in.
Thanks, Al.
Thank you.
Coming up, Solomia introduces us to a Ukrainian man who recovers war dead from the battlefield. He has a message for the parents of Russian soldiers.
Why did you raise your children? For a bright future or for death?
That's ahead on Revealed.